29, 2007, 3 o'clock p.m., Hearing Room B, and the chair is Senator Floyd Prezanski.
Good afternoon. I'll call the Senate Committee on Commerce to order. Today we have some public hearings and possible work sessions, and we also have a work session we're going to do right now to introduce a couple of committee bills. So we're open up a work session for possible induction of committee bills. Anna, can you be so kind?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In front of you are LC 1317-1 and 1317. They both have to do with form contracts. One's more whether you have mandatory arbitration in your form contract, and the other has more details on what you can't have in a form contract. These are for possible introduction of committee bills.
Can I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the LC 1317 and 1317-1 be introduced as committee bills.
Senator Byers moved LC 1317 and LC 1317-1 to be received as committee bills. Is there any discussions? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close the work session on the possible introduction of committee bills, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 194.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 194 is one of four Employment Department bills that we're going to hear today. This one expands the Employment Director's authority to reconsider unemployment tax decisions made by hearings officers. There is no revenue impact to this bill. That's a new information, and there's minimal fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. We have two people that have signed up for and in favor. Both of them are with the Employment Department. So I'm going to ask Rob Edwards and Tom Barley to come on up. And gentlemen, in whatever order you want to go in, I'm not sure if both of you are going to be given testimony, or just one with the other here for questions, but however you want to do it.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Byerly. I'm the Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance with the Employment Department. On Senate Bill 194, I brought with me our tax manager, Rob Edwards, who will testify on this bill, and I am available for questions as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Edwards. I'm the Acting UI Tax Manager for the Employment Department. And I'm here today to tell you a little bit about Senate Bill 194. Currently, and we're talking here about unemployment insurance tax cases only, currently they can be reconsidered once we have a decision by an administrative law judge for three reasons only. Those are computation errors, clerical errors, or facts not previously known to the director. What this bill does is it adds two additional reasons to include misinformation provided by a party and misapplication of law. All five of those reasons are in current law for unemployment benefit hearing cases. What we want to do is go ahead and add those additional two reasons for UI tax hearings also. We foresee mainly using this if we have an instance where we have similar sets of facts in several different cases, but for whatever reason the ALJ has come to a different conclusion in one of them, and we'd be able to correct that with an order of the director rather than having to appeal it to the Court of Appeals, which is a very costly process. We would rarely use this statute to correct what we see as a misapplication of law by an administrative law judge. We would prefer to take those to the Court of Appeals if we need to. Be happy to take any questions.
Senator Avakian first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where it says the director may reconsider determination, does that mean that can only occur on the own motion of the director, or does it set up a process whereby somebody can make an appeal to the director to reconsider?
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, my understanding is anyone could apply for that reconsideration.
Then
you may.
Is there already then a procedure set up, an administrative rule or something that explains the appeal rights to the director? Are there timelines, a process, a form, things like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, I'll let Tom answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vakin, if I may, Tom Byerly again. We have a process in administrative rule on the unemployment benefits claim side, and we would adopt a similar rule on the tax side should this be made into law that would have the process for appeal. If a director's order was issued on a misapplication of law, it would be appealable just like any other ruling by the director.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under C, new, you said I thought you said misinformation provided by or to the employment department, but this says misinformation provided to a party by the employment department.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that is correct. Thank you for that correction.
Mm-hmm. Which is you're looking for?
It is as it is in the bill. Is what we're looking for.
By the employment department. Yeah.
Okay. Just I just want to make sure there's any follow up on that. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Just to add to the record, would you share what experiences there have been by example that make the case for why this expansion of authority is needed?
I would be happy to. Senator Gordley, Mr. Chair. In the last year, and I think this is an excellent example, we had a case where the statute for an exclusion of a corporate officer is limited to closely held family corporations, and the legislature has given us authority to exclude if there is members, and throughout that statute it uses plural forms. It says family members such as grandparents, parents, children, siblings. An ALJ decided that plurals didn't necessarily mean multiple people, and said if there was a single member corporation which was just one individual, that they would qualify for that exclusion. We disagreed and did appeal that to Court of Appeals, and we were upheld at the Court of Appeals. So that's one of those rare instances where we disagreed with the ALJ's decision, and if we'd had this power, we might have been able to avoid the cost of going to Court of Appeals.
A follow-up?
Yes.
Are there any other examples?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, not that I know of off the top of my head. That was the most recent one.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who's here today who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 194? Not seeing anyone coming forward. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 194. Unless there's some strong objection at this point, we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 194. And Chair would entertain a motion regarding this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move Senate Bill 194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byers moved Senate Bill 194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Not seeing any, so ordered. And we'll close the public work session on Senate Bill 194.
Carrier.
And with the carrier on that will be, let's see, Senator Avakian, would you be so kind?
Yeah, please do.
We'll carry that one. And we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on our next bill, which is going to be Senate Bill 195. And counsel.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 195 is another employment department bill. It requires claimants for unemployment insurance to be employed in a job subject to unemployment insurance before they can re-qualify for benefits. This bill has no revenue impact, but it may have a fiscal impact, and I have the agency fiscal impact statement with me if you're interested in looking at it. The fiscal office is not able to give us a statement before the work session today, so we can talk about that more after.
Okay. Well, just out for clarification, so we, as the committee knows, since we don't have a fiscal on that, does that mean that we've been instructed not to move them until
we... No, we have not been instructed not to move them. It's up to the committee's comfort level.
Okay.
The fiscal, I expect it not to be something that costs money, actually does increase revenue, but it is a change.
Okay, and so... Mr. Byerly, you're here. You're going to give us your testimony, and you may want to cover from the perspective of the department what the fiscal might be.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. Again, Tom Byerly, Assistant Director for the Employment Department and Unemployment Insurance. I'm here to testify for Senate Bill 195. Senate Bill 195 would change the requalifying requirements for an individual who has been disqualified from the receipt of benefits either because they have quit their job or were fired for misconduct and were unable to draw their unemployment insurance benefits. Currently, the law allows for them to requalify after being disqualified if they go to work for an employer and earn an amount equal to or greater than four times their weekly benefit amount. What this law proposes to do is to require that that requalifying work be in employment subject to unemployment insurance tax. Currently, the law allows someone who is just working in employment, i.e., I painted my grandmother's fence, I overhauled my brother's car engine, or I re-roofed the garage of my neighbor. Those are not employers, and often we find when trying to verify that income that one of two things has happened. Either the work never occurred, or the work never occurred and they actually exchanged money back and forth to make it look like it had occurred, so the individual is requalified for unemployment insurance when in fact they had not requalified at all because they hadn't worked in a sufficient amount of time. Mm-hmm. What this does is it requires them to return to work in subject employment, and if you're a subject employer, which I know many of the committee are, you report that employment and pay your taxes on it. We can validate that income and be sure that the claimant has indeed requalified. With respect to the revenue aspects of this bill, this change would affect approximately 200 claimants biannually, and reduce unemployment insurance payments by nearly $1.2 million a biennium. So that's the revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
That's one that the general fund would like.
Unfortunately, this would go to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund and not the general fund.
There's still someone would like it.
You're absolutely right, Mr.
So basically, potentially, is we're going to be capturing money that may have been paid out, let's say wrongfully, by someone attempting to commit fraud or scam the state and the system.
That's correct. As an example, we had a case in a central part of the state where an individual said that they indeed overhauled their brother-in-law's car engine. We got a tip from somebody that, well, the work was never done. Our investigator went to the home and said, hey, could you pop the hood of that car for me? And when they did, it's clearly a motor that had several hundred thousand miles on it had not been touched.
Didn't get his money's worth.
No.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my one question about, what about the people? I mean, there are exempt employers, actual employers who are exempt from unemployment insurance, such as anyone who, well, I know specifically in agriculture, if you work or if you have payroll of less than $20,000 a quarter for a year, you are not subject to unemployment insurance. So what about those? I mean, there are legitimate employers out there who are not required to pay unemployment insurance.
That is very true, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer. Those individuals would not be able to requalify with that type of work to get their unemployment insurance. Now, often we see, in fact, most often, if somebody was working in that type of employment, they wouldn't be eligible for unemployment insurance in the first place. So they probably wouldn't be using that type of income to requalify.
Okay. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. How did you arrive at the number 200 claimants? What assumptions are behind that number?
Those assumptions are gathered from our benefit payment control staff. We have fraud investigators that regularly will be called upon to review these claims. I will admit it's an educated guess. It's not definitely. We know there is exactly 200 claimants that this would probably affect. But based on our experience and looking at the audits that we performed, that's what we concluded.
And then lastly, why are we doing this now? Why hasn't this change been requested before, or has it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that's a great question, and I wish I had a better answer than I wish we would have done this years ago.
Thank
but
you.
But I don't.
Thank you.
Senator Vakian.
Is there a dollar amount threshold at which one becomes qualified rather than not qualified? Or is it, I'm thinking of the situation where the guy doesn't just change out one engine, but he looks for work, he can't find work, so he sets up his own business and he changes 20 engines that year, and then something happens.
That would be independent contractor work, and it would not allow him to requalify for unemployment insurance. In that example.
Under existing law or under anything we do with
under
this
under existing law, Mr. Chair, Senator Vakian, that would allow him to requalify.
I guess my concern is, and help alleviate it if you can, that there could be situations where somebody isn't able to find work but sets up what is a more legitimate sole proprietorship, earning a regular wage for he or his family, and then something happens that ends that at some point. And after having entered a workforce in a regular marketable way, now can't go back on unemployment. And whether, and I don't know that that particularly fits the mission of what you're trying to accomplish with unemployment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vakian, that would be an exception that that person would not be able to come in and requalify. That's correct.
Chair has a question. Mr. Byerly, based on what Senator Vakian's asked, is there a guesstimation on the part of the department as to how many people could be, let's say, within that exception to under the new law if it was passed as proposed?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer to that question. We could go back and try to ascertain that. Again, as my response to Senator Beyer, most individuals who are working in an independent contractor relationship or starting their own business are not claiming unemployment insurance in the first place. That's not to say that it couldn't happen, but we could go back and make an educated guess on that. I would guess that it would be fairly low.
So I think the concern that I'm hearing, at least from a few of the committee members on this, is that you want to make certain that there's not a one-size-fits-all. And if you have an individual who was, you know, qualified for unemployment or workers' comp and then basically, for whatever reason, wasn't able to find unemployment, I guess we're talking about, couldn't find employment, you decided that they're going to strike out on their own and try to start their own business, and then for whatever reason wasn't able to make that work, but they still were within the time frame under the existing law to requalify, that those individuals would have some means to at least be considered for that. That's what I'm kind of hearing. Senator Beyer?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think Tom needs to correct me if I'm wrong, but what your scenario was someone who had qualified for UI and went off of it because they went into an independent contractor's work, and then that fails, so they want to get back onto UI, but that person had qualified, so I think they would still be eligible. If this is Bill talking about someone who the department determines they are not eligible for UI for some reason, they need to go out and find a job to earn some money so then they can be eligible for UI. So it's not someone who was eligible and chose to get off of it for some other reason. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that's correct. This would address the situation where someone was disqualified. They were monetarily eligible for benefits. In other words, they had a claim there. But for reasons that they weren't unemployed through no fault of their own, they were disqualified. And now they need to requalify somehow with some subsequent work to get back on their claim.
Okay. Senator Vakian,
You know, I think the point I'm raising is might be a legitimate one. I just don't know yet. My guess would be there's not very many people that would fit the category I described. But at the same time, there's not very many people fitting the category that you're trying to fix, 200 people.
Correct.
And, without having any knowledge about it, I guess I would question whether there's 100 or 200 people that might fit that other category, and we end up potentially hurting as many people as we're trying to catch that are doing the bad stuff. So I just don't know, and I don't know if your department has the answer to that question or not.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vakian, we are certainly willing to go back and look at the numbers and see what we can come up with and come back to the committee with some additional data.
Okay. Is there any other questions at this time? If not, I think we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing, and I think that is a good course to take at this point, and we can set this out. I'll have Ms. Ron give us a time of when that can be done, maybe in the next couple of weeks, for putting it on for a possible work session at that time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
That's fine with me. I tend to be very supportive of this bill, though I'll be interested in hearing whether there's any evidence to the contrary. But I think the public out there get really incensed when people are working the system and trying to do an end run around the rules. It's the same as people that are trying to avoid and using various scams to avoid paying their taxes. And on the contrary, I just can't imagine that there's two, much less 200, that go to the business of, you know, forming their own business in order to requalify and work at it for a while, and then the business fails and so on. There's a lot of people out there that would rather try to scam the system than to actually go out and get a job. If we pass this bill, everybody would know that they're going to requalify. Once their unemployment runs out, they're going to requalify. They have to work at a job for a period of time that pays unemployment insurance. They would then go out and look for that kind of a job. They wouldn't try to form their own business if what they're trying to do is to requalify for unemployment. So I want to hear if there's additional evidence, but my inclination is to strongly support this bill.
Thank you, Senator Morrell. And I'll tell you, I also support it, but I want to give, the committee an opportunity to see what, if anything, the department can come up with before we actually move it out, since there have been, let's say, at least a legitimate inquiry as to, is this something that may have unintended consequences?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think what we're after is we want rules that are fair in their application, and then we are also wanting to be sure, as sure as we can be, about unintended consequences.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, I can certainly appreciate that. Two of our bills, this bill and Senate Bill 196, is aimed squarely at trying to help maintain the integrity of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. However, as Senator Gordley stated so well, we don't want to have any unintended circumstances, but we are trying to close up some loopholes for fraud, to be blunt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Worth it there.
All right, since we've closed that public hearing on Senate Bill 195, I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 196. And, Anna, if you'd be so kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I direct the committee's attention to a corrected staff measure summary on your desk. For some reason, I had it had no fiscal impact on the fiscal and actually does have a fiscal impact, and the statement is not issued yet. It's the same situation as the last bill, Senate Bill 195. So we can get more information about that later. I have the fiscal impact from the agency, and I'm sure Mr. Byerly will talk more about that. This bill, Senate Bill 196, increases the penalties for unemployment insurance fraud. I don't have any information about the revenue impact, and as I said, it will have a fiscal impact, and that's not issued yet.
Thank you. Mr. Byerly.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Tom Byerly, Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance for the Employment Department. Senate Bill 196, as I referred to earlier, is another measure from the Employment Department to help us work on maintaining the integrity of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. The purpose of the bill is to deter individuals from withholding or misrepresenting information when they're claiming unemployment insurance benefits. This bill would increase the fraud penalty for somebody who has committed misrepresentation to obtain benefits. Currently, depending on the misrepresentation that we're examining, we can penalize somebody 26 weeks of future benefits. In other words, they would have to claim 26 weeks, just like they planned to get an unemployment check. They had to be looking for work, be willing to accept work, and are able to work to serve that penalty. And that penalty is in addition to repaying the benefits they received incorrectly. This bill would increase that penalty to 52 weeks. It'd be a whole year. So this could go on the claim that they frauded us on, as well as subsequent claims, for up to 5 years. Currently, the penalty is only extended for 3 years. This will give us the opportunity to have them offset that penalty for 5 years. In addition, the bill seeks to make a real strong statement in that we want to add a 15% monetary penalty of the amount of the overpayment to the individual to repay us. So not only would they repay the money that they received incorrectly, on top of that, we would charge them a 15% penalty. That penalty money that came back, as well as the interest on the overpayment, is slated to go into our Employment Department Special Administrative Fraud Fund that we use to fund a portion of our staff that we use to detect and collect overpayment, benefit overpayments, and so that would go into that fund. We understand that we only spend those monies at the approval of the legislature, so we don't have anything on the docket right now to ask for those monies to be spent. But we expect revenues to come in of just over $1.4 million on these additional overpayments and penalties.
Wow. Questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Did I hear you say that the penalty and the overpayment goes into the fraud fund, or just the penalty, or the?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, pull those glasses off. It's the interest on the overpayment and the penalty.
Okay,
the overpayment itself goes back to the trust fund.
Okay.
And obviously our goal is to collect those monies back to keep employer taxes down if the trust fund is sound.
Follow-up?
Yes.
What rate of interest do you charge?
We charge 1% a month or 12% a year.
A lot cheaper than the payday loans.
Well, I guess I know. Actually, seriously, I was going to use that. What's your term if you include a 15% penalty on that?
Yeah.
I mean, you could be, you know, it all depends on how many days it's in.
Any other questions?
One question.
Yes.
Again, just to add to the record, currently, what is the rate of fraud in this program?
The rate of unemployment insurance fraud, we, based on what we're uncovering, is a little over 2% of all the weeks that are claimed by claimants.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 196. And I'm going to go ahead and take the bold move of opening up a work session on Senate Bill 196.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 196 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 196 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any opposition or objections? Not seeing or hearing any. So moved and passed, and it will go to the floor. And as a carrier, Senator Rendell, would you be so kind?
Oh, I'd be happy to carry this one.
I assume you would be.
I'm an anti-fraud kind of guy.
I kind of picked that up on the last one. So Senator Monroe will be our carrier, and we will go ahead and close that work session on Senate Bill 196, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 197.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is another Employment Department bill. It rewrites the Employment Department's authorization for disclosing confidential information and allows increased access to aggregate information about industries. There's no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on this bill.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Byerly, why don't you go ahead and go through the motions on the name and everything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom Byerly, I'm Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance at the Employment Department, testifying on Senate Bill 197. I apologize, first of all, for monopolizing your entire afternoon, but thank you for listening. This bill is truly a housekeeping bill. We are bringing this forward to simplify the language of our statute relating to the confidentiality of unemployment insurance records. It cleans up and simplifies language from the department statute that has been added to and subtracted and moved around for several years, if not decades. It reorganizes the flow for easier understanding. It's going to ensure the alignment with the recently released federal confidentiality rules on unemployment records and employment department records in general. It makes no changes to what we currently allow in statute as far as exceptions to the rule of who can have confidential information and who cannot. It makes clear the department's ability to share confidential information with Workforce Investment Act partners, such as vocational rehab, community colleges, Workforce Investment Act Title I-B partners, and those types. Previously, we used a broad term in the current statute. It was referred to as discharge of duties by the director, and over the years, that's been a term that's been frustrating to many of our partners and legislative council as far as how broad that term was, so this now makes it more specific. It improves and clarifies the department's ability to share certain types of economic information. It allows us to, it makes the company's industry classification code not confidential, whereas now that it is. There's really no secret, as an example, that McDonald's is a restaurant or that Freightliner makes trucks. We don't think...
They used to.
Good point. Touche. Who gave me this example, anyway? Under our current cautious interpretation of the existing statute, supported by the Department of Justice, we've not released that information. And we want to make it clear that we're not going to say how many employees these people have, but they know what business they're in, so releasing that industry code is not really something we want to keep confidential any longer. It also allows us to present economic information using maps in the geographic information system, where we could show where certain types of industries are located in an area, as far as key industries. Such maps can be invaluable to planners, policymakers, legislators, and individuals making decisions on business or government agency locations. So we won't show any specific identifiable information on the companies, no names, addresses, or actual employment payroll or hours or work levels. The intent of this bill is not to release any specific employment, payroll, wage, and hour data by any individual or business. It makes no changes to what we currently allow the statute as far as exceptions to the rule of who can have confidential information and who cannot. It makes clear the department's ability to share confidential information with Workforce Investment Act partners, such as vocational rehab, community colleges, Workforce Investment Act Title I-B partners, and those types. Previously, we used a broad term in the current statute. It was referred to as discharge of duties by the director, and over the years that's been a term that's been frustrating to many of our partners and legislative council as far as how broad that term was, so this now makes it more specific. It improves and clarifies the department's ability to share certain types of economic information. It allows us to It makes the company's industry classification code not confidential, whereas now that it is. There's really no secret, as an example, that McDonald's is a restaurant or that Freightliner makes trucks. We don't think...
They used to.
Good point. Touche. Who gave me this example, anyway? Under our current cautious interpretation of the existing statute, supported by the Department of Justice, we've not released that information, and we want to make it clear that we're not going to say how many employees these people have, but they know what business they're in, so releasing that industry code is not really something we want to keep confidential any longer. It also allows us to present economic information using maps in the geographic information system, where we can show where certain types of industries are located in an area, as far as key industries. Such maps can be invaluable to planners, policymakers, legislators, and individuals making decisions on business or government agency locations. So we won't show any specific identifiable information on the companies, no names, addresses, or actual employment payroll or hours or work levels. The intent of this bill is not to release any specific employment, payroll, wage, and hour data by any individual or business. Those types of information on economic development are aggregate only. We don't list specific information. We're trying to balance a prudent and efficient sharing of government information with a company's right to have the proprietary information kept confidential.
Questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it was last session that the Bureau of Labor and Industries brought a bill much shorter than this bill, but I think it was dealing with the same chapters of law, and I was wondering if you could tell me if that's the case or not. Their bill was asking for the specific authorization for them to get records from you.
This does not incorporate that concept, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer. All this bill does is clean up the current statute and just rearrange the order of the exceptions. The Bureau of Labor and Industries do have a minor exception in the current law that we're keeping in this law.
Could you refresh my memory? Did that bill pass and become a new law last session, or is that, it seemed like it, I recall it passing out of this committee, the Commerce Committee last session, and going to the floor of the Senate, but I don't recall what happened after that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I don't have a recollection. I'm really sorry. I don't think it did. But
we're not going to move this bill today. I know that there's been some requests to hold on to it because there might be some additional stuff coming in from Boley. At least they've asked to just have an opportunity to comment on the bill. Apparently, they had not had a chance to do that. And so the chair has made a decision that we won't move this one today. And so if we can get that information back.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I'll look into that. I'm sorry I didn't have the information. I apologize.
Thank you.
In addition, Mr. Chair,
yes.
In the written testimony, Mr. Byerly, you indicate that this will bring the law into alignment with the new federal confidentiality regulations. It would be helpful to know what the alignment is. What are those regulations? If not now, later when you come back.
Good point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I'd be happy to provide those regulations. They're quite lengthy, but I'm happy to bring them along. And I can
maybe
highlight
a synopsis.
I can highlight where we've aligned.
A summary that tells us. You've indicated that this is an important point. I would just like to understand what that is.
I can bring that back, certainly, before the next work session.
Yeah, I think what we would like, Senator Gordley wants the specifics, is just kind of the summary of how this is coming in as compared to the actual regs, mm-hmm. knowing how much paper the feds use, that might break the bank on the savings that we get from the other bills that we're just getting ready to pass.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I'll try to do that electronically as much as possible.
make sure the title and citation of the act are included.
Rule book version.
All right, any other questions or requests? All right, thank you very much. And let me just ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony on this enticing bill, Senate Bill 197. Not seeing or hearing anyone, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 197. And, Council, is there anything else that we need to go over today?
No, we are finished. Thank you.
So we'll adjourn for today. Thank you very much. And I apologize to the committee as well as to those here that I was running a little late.
No problem. Next hearing would be fun.
Yeah.